There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes it
home. Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, Craig Hastings, spent 20 years in the U.S. Air Force, followed by another 15 as a DoD contractor, which allowed him to live in several places overseas and in the United States. He continues working for a major computer company under contract with a major airline manufacturer. Craig is also an author who has released his first novel, an inspirational fiction romance titled Moose Ridge, Ending to Beginning. Good morning, Craig. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Craig, I'm really excited to talk with you. I enjoyed your book, and I see by your history, your Air Force career is kind of dear to my heart because I have my sister and my brother-in-law spent 20 years in the Air Force. My husband was in the Air Force and for 4 years. So I want to thank you for your service and how much we appreciate you dedicating time to our country. And I'd like to know, what childhood experiences influenced you to pursue a military career?
Well, part of it was family history. My father was in the military. I grew up in the 60s and early 70s. Of course, Vietnam was going on during that time. Patriotism was a big, big deal. Plus, I started working when I was 14, worked full-time from 16 on through high school, and didn't feel like really working my way through college, I guess. And so the options with the GI Bill and everything that were offered, the desire to serve my country, I guess, was kind of inbred in me from my family history. My two brothers, stepbrothers, had gone into the Air Force earlier. They were older than me. And so it, just seemed right to follow in their footsteps, I guess. Plus the draft was still up. I was one of the last few years of the draft, and of course they like to refer to those of us who went in the Air Force as the legal draft dodgers, so we wouldn't go in the Army, but that's kind of the joke between the services, who they all like to kid each other. but that was all part of it. It was, what options did I have? I would have lived in a small town in Indiana. If I didn't go to college, what else was I going to do?
I think that's part of my sister's thinking too, Craig, because we grew up in a small town and she felt she wasn't college material. She struggled all through high school just to keep her grades up and decided that college was not her thing, and she didn't really want to work for the local telephone company or whatever, and decided to join the Air Force and made a very nice career out of it. I also had a great dream of joining the Air Force after I got out of nursing school. And they wouldn't take me because I had a visual impairment. So she got to do the Air Force, and I got to spend my career actually working with veterans at a VA hospital. So it all worked out well.
Well, wow, that's great. You mentioned the vision issue. One of the things that excited me when I first started talking to a recruiter and looking into different jobs, and you had to take application or aptitude test, and I scored high enough that there was one of the jobs was a flight simulator specialist, and it's one of the only ones where the enlisted actually are trained to fly. And, this just really excited me. I thought this would be great. Then when I was doing my physical, turned out I was colorblind. And so they wouldn't let me do it. And the funniest thing was then the job I did take in communications, my first assignment, while I was waiting for my clearance, I was working the switchboard, and everything was color-coded. I'm like, guys, this don't work. I can't see those colors. But, I talked to a couple of guys who were in that other career field. They were like, I don't understand that. There's nothing color-coded in there. What doesn't make any sense. But that's the military for you.
Well, I'm glad you had a good career, though. It sounds like you saw a lot of places and you did a lot of moving. And I noticed where you said moving is not your favorite thing to do anymore. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But what did you learn about God and your relationship with him during your career, Craig? If anything, was Christianity a part of your life at the time?
It was. I mean, I had been raised, you might say raised in the church. I always joke that I was born a Baptist. I mean, later I became a Christian when I realized what salvation meant and all that. But, the Baptist was kind of injected to me from probably a week old. God had been an important part of my life when I went in the military now. And as some, plus working shift work and things, it was tough. But I did find a local church to attend on my first assignment and kind of stayed with that. And met a girl that was had Christian beliefs, and that helped as well. As I look back now at my career, it's amazing what I see that was happening that I think, shows the evidence of God controlling where I went, what I did. He always seemed to have a place for me, that once I got there was something for me to do to help either share about God or, work in a local church. Got to work with a lot of mission churches and things. He moved us around, but it was always seemed he had a place for us. It was great knowing that.
That does sound like God's fingerprint on your life, Craig, because I don't know the first thing about the military because I never was in the military, but from stories that you hear and things like that, it can be kind of a rough go for a Christian to try to uphold their principles. If I understand correctly, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there can be some challenges with that. Do you agree? And did you have problems facing those challenges?
Oh, yeah, I think it's, I definitely agree. I mean, there are influences there that aren't the best. The barracks life doesn't lend itself Christian issues in a Christian mm-hmm. lifestyle. I can't say I was Mr. Do-Gooder all the time, but I mean, the temptations are there. And with the military itself, I guess you need to have a strong faith and a strong following I can't really say that the temptations are more in the military than they would be elsewhere. I think as I talk to people that were in college and fraternities and things like that, they're
yes.
same temptations are there. The military, you're away from home, you're away from your other influences, and you have to societally make an effort in order to keep your beliefs and your morals as they need to be. Of course, we all make mistakes and fall back at times, I guess, but the amazing thing is God is a forgiving God and a loving God, and he's there no matter what. And even if we drift far away, he's still right there and is waiting for us to turn back. But it was amazing to me to see how much God was involved in just my life. I mean, the United States military, when it comes to assignments and things like that, it's a pretty big monster, but
yes.
It amazes me that God even controlled them.
Craig, you had said you were in several different bases. You were in the States and you were overseas. What would you say was your favorite country to spend time in, and why?
I think it would probably be the UK, United Kingdom. Mainly because then we were in Germany for 12 years. We were in the United Kingdom a total of 8 years. And the one thing the United Kingdom We were in Germany first, and then came out in Kingdom. It was almost like a halfway house to allow us to adjust back to English language. After being, 12 years of, billboards and stuff that are a foreign language and everything around you is a foreign language, we enjoyed our time in Germany. And we're in a beautiful part of the country. And it was really amazing to see God's handiwork on the countryside. But the UK was a lot more comfortable, I guess, less stress-free living, and especially, I enjoyed Scotland. I mean, just the countryside in Scotland is gorgeous. England is too. The parts we were at north of London, that would be my favorite place. Now I did what they call TDYs, temporary duties, to other places. I was in Sarajevo, right, for a while, and other places around. And Europe is an interesting place. The farthest I got west was Hawaii.
Okay.
it was amazing to me, though, in the United States, I was pretty much always parallel right between Omaha and Dallas. If I was here, I would see the station in somewhere on that line, and on duty, temporary duty elsewhere on that line, up and down Omaha. Basically, it was Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Tinker Air Force Base here in Oklahoma City, or Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth. And I was either stationed there or TDY there for most of my career when I was in the States. Part of that was God guiding me and leading me to be able to get involved in computer programming. Maybe that was the reason why my colorblindness test came out what it was. So I didn't take that path. And the path he led me on led to that pretty quickly. And it was almost like I found my home, you might say, when it came to computers. I don't know. Computer programmers, a lot of people think, are a little strange, but most of us think other people are strange. I just, as we talked earlier about technology, my joke is always, computers are proof that God has a sense of humor.
Isn't that the truth?
The military career provided a lot to us. The military career gave us so many opportunities, not only that, I used to joke that it was my the mission board. It was the perfect mission board. First off, they would guarantee you wherever they sent you, there would be English-speaking people, and also an opportunity. And then they would also, provide you supplies that you couldn't get regularly, American-type stuff at the commissary on the base.
Right.
So it was the perfect of mission boards, and very supportive, too. Although they were a little lack in support of actually attending church, but sometimes the shift got in the way. But the one thing that we realized too, after being overseas for a while, and actually the first time we were over, was not everybody can come back for Christmas or for Thanksgiving, and most of us are used to spending those with families, and all of a sudden you don't have your family around anymore. But it was a perfect opportunity to invite people that were in the barracks, single people in the barracks, or other young families that couldn't go back, and, get 10 or 15 people around for Thanksgiving dinner or for Christmas. And it also was a time people were a little bit more open to hearing about God, just kind of coincides with those periods. So, if your listeners are thinking about it and everything, when it comes around Thanksgiving and Christmas, lift up a prayer for those Christians that are overseas, that they would be able to invite others into their home and share the message.
Definitely.
It's a wonderful opportunity.
Yes, it is. It's a perfect opportunity to do that, Craig. And thank you for sharing that. Well, Craig, we very briefly mentioned your book, and we're going to come to that soon. But first, I'd like to ask you, the premise of this show, folks who come on to Step Into the Light, they either share a, a difficult time in their life, a time that was perhaps kind of dark for them, and how they found their way back to light, or they share a ministry that, whether it be writing or some other creative endeavor that leads others back to light. And I know that you have a story, and I would like to invite you to share that story at this time, if you're comfortable doing that.
I guess you're probably referring to my the birth of our first son.
Yes.
It was interesting. Of course, we got married in 1975, and our first son was born January 13th, 1977. We were both very, very young. Mm-hmm. And I guess you might say stupid, obviously naive. But it was an interesting birth, and the fact that my wife went way past the due date. But then when the baby was born, it was a easy delivery and things. And I remember after delivery was over, I, of course, went off because I had to make phone calls to let everybody know. But when I got back to her room, I found her crying. Of course, I had heard about, postpartum depression and all that. And finally, I got her calmed down enough to tell me what was going on. And she let me know that a nurse told her there was problems. They didn't think the baby would live through the night. So from that point, of course, I had to go get people and stuff. And there were problems. The child was having a hard time breathing. In fact, whenever he went to sleep, he would quit breathing. And that's how the nurse found him in the nursery. She's walking by and noticed he was blue. Once she stimulated and woke him up, he started breathing again. That was in a military hospital in Omaha, Nebraska, Tinker Air Force, off Air Force Base. And they were quick to contact the hospital there that had a neonatal unit, emergency care unit there at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, who came down, spent some time, did some checking, and then took the baby back to their hospital. So it was midnight by the time I got there, once kind of settled things down, everything. And I remember standing, getting there and going through the process I needed to get into the ICU and the isolette where my son was lying, and looking at him. And the strange thing about the whole thing with him is he looked normal. You could not see any issues, but they were definitely there. I remember thinking I should be more upset. Why is this impacting me? It was impacting, but it just didn't seem like it was coming like it should. But I remember the words of my grandmother as I stood over the ice sled is, it's okay. God's in charge. And it helped me just to deal with it that night. And as we got the information, and then, of course, I had to call everybody back and let them know that there were issues and we weren't sure what was going on. Then I also, for the next few days, had to deal with the wife in one hospital, the son in the other hospital, and then she was finally dismissed, and it had been several days since she had seen her son and got her in. And so then we started the process. Originally, they weren't sure how long he would live, and after about 3 or 4 days, they realized that there had not been any bowel movement. And they were very concerned about that, and they called in a specialist, and he asked to do some biopsies. We allowed it, and then after those tests came back, he came back and told us that there was a problem with the nerves in the colon and intestine, and that the child would never be able to eat normal or absorb food. He said, "So I'm sorry to tell you, but there's just no hope." He said, I understand you're Christian, so I would ask you to, pray to your God and to help you understand this and live through this. And I remember telling him, I'll pray, but I'm not praying that. If God wants his child to live, it will live. So they had done a call, ileostomy, where they brought the intestine to the surface during the surgery when they were doing the biopsies. And he told us at the time, he said, "I don't know why I did it, but we were there, the incision was made, so it made sense. So about 3 days later, or 2 days later, one of his associates were over checking the incision and things. And when she took the Band-Aid off, it just stool went everywhere, all over the isolette, all over the, you know, it just shot out. It was unreal. And she was in shock. She didn't know what to do. She called the doctor. He came over. He didn't know what to do. He was like, no, this can't be. And so he said, we're going to have to go take biopsies again. And I said, well, fine. And he had explained to us that the problem was in the nervous system, and the nervous system is one of the first things that develop in the baby very early on in a matter of weeks. And so the fact that here, you know, after 9 months, there is still no evidence of nerve cells is why he gave us the, you know, what he did. And so they went in, and he came before he had the surgery. He said, I'm going to take these slides. He said, but we need to try to get them to another laboratory who is better equipped than ours is here. He said, the only problem is it would take several hours to get them there, and the slides will only be good for a few hours, and we can't get them there that quick. Well, while he's standing there talking with me, one of the other doctors that were involved said, well, he's from Moffitt. Maybe we can call the base. So they did. They called the base, and arrangements were made. He did the biopsies. They performed the slides. And by ambulance, they took him to the base. They handed him to a pilot and a fighter. He flew him to March Air Force Base and took him into UCLA. I think it was March Air Force Base. Took him to UCLA Medical Center. There, they were able to run their test and actually found evidence of the nerve cells. Premature, but they were there. It was just amazing that God had answered our prayer. And this doctor, then it gave me an opportunity to talk to him about God. And, I mean, I could just see he didn't make any judgments. He didn't make any decisions, but I could see it was entering his mind. Just this was not something he was used to seeing. We went on then. The child, there was other issues. He breathing problem. They decided to put in lung pacers. He was the youngest person ever to have the lung pacers put in. And that was about 3 months. By that time, he'd had four or five different surgeries. And kept surprising him, coming through every one. I'll admit it was tough on us, but we seemed to make it through all the time. I kept hearing my grandmother's voice. It's okay. God's in charge. Just knowing that allowed me to push on, you might say. It was amazing the support we got from the base, for the people I worked with, allow us to work around the schedule. Of course, I was a young airman. It wasn't like I was upper rank and, you know, easy. I was young there, but still they made a lot of things happen and allowed my schedule to be very flexible so we could be, you know, for surgeries and for seeing my wife and there was so much. He was a little over 6 months old when he got to come home. They felt we could take care of him there. And he was home for a few weeks when one night everything stopped. They rushed him to the hospital. Never could get his heart or breathing started again, and he passed away. And his specialist that had been involved asked to do an autopsy, and when they did, they could never find anything that went wrong. It was just like he passed away of natural causes. It had nothing to do with his breathing, had nothing to do with his intestines, just like it. That was it. Even though it, you know, it hurt. You know, I still felt that was God's timing. He had done maybe what he was here to do. It really impacted my life. The 6 months while he was in the hospital, we got to talk with other parents whose children were there. A lot of preemies were in the ICU, other babies with problems. And we were able to talk to them and share with them about God. So there was a lot of positive that came out of that 6 months. And in fact, after when they did the autopsy, they removed the the lung patients that he had, and there was a child in Chicago that the doctor had heard of, and so he asked what we wanted done with them, if he could donate them to this child in Chicago, whose parents didn't, you know, military paid for them with my medical, but so we did. And from everything we were told, his surgery was successful, and he lived. So it there was so much positive to it. It really helped me. I think as I stood over that isolette as a 20-year-old boy, it allowed me to become a 20-year-old man, and it changed my life. God was able to use that a lot of times in a very positive light. And still today, you know, I hear that voice. It's okay. God's in charge. And there's been a lot of times in my life where I found myself in predicament or something that may not be the safest, you might say. But I knew it was okay because God's in charge. You know, he wouldn't bring me there if something like that was going to happen. But even if it did, then it was in God's time. So it's okay because God's in charge.
Goodness, that's such an emotional story.
Well,
thank
yeah,
you so much for sharing that with us, because I know it's got to be very, very deeply emotional for you to this day. And it is amazing. I'm sure you look back on that, Craig, and I would be willing to guess that there are people whose lives you touch that you don't even remember. And you will probably not know until your day in heaven how many people you touched going through that experience and sharing about God and just sharing your strength and your faith through that whole ordeal. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Well, you're welcome, man. And you talk about sharing, because of the type surgery and everything, it was actually on the national news. It was at a time where the TV show Bionic Man was big.
Yes.
And
yes,
one of the nurses made a shirt for him that said Bionic Baby. And they actually did an interview with the doctor and with us, and it was actually made the national news. We had people from all over the United States that were contacting us because they'd heard the story. And that was one of the things that got me, is the how many people he reached, meaning my son, reached from an isolette in an ICU in Omaha, Nebraska. And that showed me that God can use anything to share his word and to share his desires.
Yes, he can. So what year was this, Craig?
That was in 1977. As an extension to that, one thing that we didn't quite realize right off, but our second son was born one day short of 1 year after our first son's death.
Oh, my goodness.
God didn't let it go a year. That, to me, was just totally amazing.
Absolutely,
and we
yes.
Have, yeah, and we now have two wonderful sons. They're actually both here now in Oklahoma City. They're a great blessing to us. And last August, our first granddaughter was born.
Oh.
And she turned 6 months and, 5 days? And so we're just over the moon. God has blessed us so much.
Yes, absolutely. And, yes, you will enjoy that granddaughter. Well, what a blessing, Craig. Thank you for sharing that happiness in your life as well. Well, at this point, we're going to take a quick break, and this is where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. My guest is Craig Hastings. Craig has had quite a career in the Air Force. We've talked about that quite a bit, and he is also an author. We're going to get to that next, but Craig shared a very moving and heartrending story with us about an experience that
that he had in his life and how it changed his life. If you would like to listen to the show again, or we hope you will refer it to friends and family, you can go to my website, which is Patty Sheene, that's spelled PattiSheene.com. There's a Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. You'll find a link to the show that we have recorded with Craig and all the shows that we have recorded to date. Under each one of them is a more information tab, and there you'll find any social media or website information that you would like to pursue learning more about our guests. So with that, let's get back to Craig. And Craig, you began writing. What motivated you to begin a writing career?
Well, I've always enjoyed reading from early on, and I also enjoyed telling stories. My mom used to tell the story about sitting around the dinner table, my sisters having things to share. They were older than I was, share about what went on at school. And of course, I went to kindergarten at that time. What can you tell? You know, yeah, we did naps. So I would make up stories. So I would have something to share at the dinner table. I don't remember much of them about them myself, but I guess they were very entertaining. But I've always enjoyed telling stories and relating things that I remember and events that have happened. Also reading. And one of the things that got me as I was reading a lot of books, I would come across something, that doesn't make sense. You know, that's not right. Who, you know, and even some of my favorite authors, some of their stuff just didn't jive. And I guess that's that quirk in the programmer that's in me in wanting everything to fit. I'd had an idea for a book for a lot of years, an espionage type book. And at one point I had some free times early, about 2013. So I started writing it. I was really kind of amazed how quickly it all came together. Also how, you know, the characters kind of came to life. And the as the story was developing, other characters came in, and that all just kind of amazed me as it rolled out. And of course, I'm not saying that after just a short period it was finished and ready for publishing. I mean, it, you know, still
sure.
Need a lot of editing and a lot of polishing and a lot of changing. And at one point, I think it was 150,000 words that an agent wouldn't even talk to you.
No, I know.
That.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As a debut book. So there was a lot of editing going down. And but while I was working on that, other ideas started coming up. And I just enjoyed developing the stories. That to me was just amazing. And to see where they would go. And sometimes I would try to steer it to where I wanted it to go, and it wouldn't go. I'd have to
yeah.
give up and go back and let the story lead. But and it, as many authors know, your first book rarely gets published, and sometimes not even your second, third, or fourth. Who knows how many there are? But while I was writing, my first few books were all thrillers, spy thrillers, based upon characters that were in there. There was another thought in the back of my mind, another idea, and one of the things I'd always wanted to do is write a book with a Christian message to it, something to share. I mean, I'd been a lay preacher. I taught Bible studies and Sunday school classes and led youth group and things like that over the years. But I always wanted to reach a larger audience and with some of the stuff and an idea. And, of course, that turned into the book Moose Ridge, Ending the Beginning. And it was, took a few years to get to the point, for it being published, and the sales are going well, but I'm getting the good feedback from people on it, the message that it has.
One of the things that first of all, I like the title because it's kind of a twist. You're used to hearing the beginning to the end, and yet you flip that around, ending to beginning, and I think that was one of the things that attracted me to the book when I saw probably on ACFW advertising. I think I saw it first, and then I saw it a couple of more times, and I thought, oh, wow, this sounds like it would be an interesting book to read. And yeah, I enjoyed reading it. So why did you choose to write about a young woman? I thought that was interesting for a male author to have a female as your main character.
You know, I have a lot of people ask me that, basically what happened was an idea of a situation came to me, and that is somebody who has really not ever had any experience or open to Christianity or Christian thoughts as part of their life, but yet has had a very tough life, and they reach the point where they think that's it, you know, it's ending, and then they meet some Christians, and they start seeing this, how they deal with tragedies in their life. So as I started thinking about that and how that story would develop, it was a female character that introduced herself, you might say, who came up, because I had to think of something, somebody that was comfortable in one spot, who's now all of a sudden brought into a completely different environment, and how would they react? Because if you're, I guess the way I saw it too, is if you're comfortable in your environment, sometimes you're not welcome or open to other ideas and seeing things
yes.
around you. So in this case, Jasmine, New York City girl, who at one time was born into a family of extreme wealth, and then at the age of 12 had everything taken away, and she ends up in foster care, but is able to eventually get to Harvard, start back on her road, and she has a lot of heartaches going on. Her mother dies, her father goes to jail, then he's killed. She ends up and graduates from Harvard, but while she's there, she meets a man, and this is the love of her life, as far as she, you know, sees, and he ends up going to Wyoming, and so she follows him there. And when she gets there, because she thinks this is it, her life is finally coming out. You know, she's finally got the happiness that she's always going to have. And she's handed a letter and finds out, you know, in her mind, that's it. It's over. But then she meets some people who are Christians. And she realizes at first, you know, she just thinks they're Western folks, not as educated, not as sophisticated as she would be coming from New York. And
a
Boston.
Little strange.
Yep.
I think she finds them a little strange.
Yeah, she's out of her environment, obviously.
Definitely.
And, but she finds out the first person she meets that she learns anything about is Sadie, who's in her 80s. And, of course, she thinks that Sadie mentions God a few times in their conversation. So she thinks, well, she's probably, you know, uneducated, hasn't really seen the world, you know, so she'll let it go. I don't want to upset her. She seems like a nice lady. And then she finds out she's actually a heart specialist for pediatric heart specialist and was head of pediatrics in UCLA Medical Center. This is not an unintelligent lady.
Exactly, and not a backwoods hick like she thought.
Yeah. But she learns that she had so much tragedy in her life, but yet she is still counting the blessings of God, and Jasmine doesn't understand this. And so that's basically what the story is about. As she comes to this, listens and basically watches the witness of the Christians around her. And, of course, toward then the book, another tragedy hits. But it's a book about basically dealing with tragedy. And she realizes that she had to have the end of her old life in order to have the beginning of her new life. And that's where the title came from.
Well, I thought it was a really good book. And I, of course, for those who enjoy the romantic element, yes, there is some romance in there. And
yes, yeah.
I particularly was drawn to the book, too, because your, goodness, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, Craig. It's been quite a while since I read the book.
Jason?
Jason. Jason was a vet, so that kind of also touched my heart because my granddaughter is going to school to be a vet, so...
Oh, well.
There were just several elements about the book that caught my attention.
and originally, as I was starting to write the book, I knew she was going to have to meet somebody. I mean, it was going to be a romance base because I really thought that would draw readers.
Yes.
To have the romance rather than just, you know, straight otherwise, to have this romance part of it. Originally, I was going to have him to be a pastor.
Oh, okay.
You know, that would just made at that time made sense. But as I'm going along, I thought, no, it needs to be a layperson. Because if he was a pastor, everybody would expect him to act the way he's acting.
Exactly.
Would expect him to be able to deal with heartache and things like this. But as a layperson, then he relates to so many other people. And a lot of my own life, you might say, in comes across through what he shares to Jasmine throughout. Sadie, at times, sounds a lot like my grandmother. but that's Jason's grandmother. His parents were killed in a car wreck. But he deals with a lot of heartache. His grandmother deals with a lot of heartache. And now Jasmine is watching and seeing, but yet how positive and how blessed they count and their relationship with God. And they actually talk to him like he's a person when they pray. This is just all foreign to her. I guess the idea that I wanted to get across to in it, that to me as I was writing it was coming out, was how much a witness we can be in just our everyday actions. We don't have to always be preaching in order to present the witness that God wants us to. Sometimes it's just how we react to things around us.
Well, I don't want to spoil it for listeners who may want to read the book, but I also thought Stanley was one of your really fun characters.
Oh, yeah, I don't know where Stanley came from, but he showed up and was such a character. And then, of course, we see Bob later, and the two of them, I think, are just incredible. And they continue in the series. Stanley, of course, he has a penchant for a certain drink.
Yeah.
If anybody knows IT people from the 60s and 70s, that was our standard. That was our stable, and it probably still is. He's a character, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I've had more than one Stanley outside my front door.
Let's see what listeners think
about that.
And it's amazing. They can give you – they do have expression.
Absolutely.
The way they look at you is there. And Stanley's very good at it.
Yes, he is. Yes, I really like Stanley. I guess we probably ought to clue listeners in that Stanley is not human, huh?
No, he's a lizard.
He's a lizard.
Or as Jason calls him, he's his exterminator.
Yeah, there you go.
He takes care of the bugs around the veterinarian clinic.
He sure does. Yes.
Which I'll admit, I haven't spent a lot of time veterinarian clinics, but I would think large animal veterinarian clinics would have an issue with bugs and rodents and things.
I would think that, yeah, that would be quite an issue for them.
So I would think, hey, what better than to have a bearded lizard?
Exactly.
Because that's what they take care of.
Craig, you, like you said, you didn't start writing as a little kid like some of my other guests did. You started writing kind of later in life. What stumbling blocks did you have to overcome to launch your writing career? I don't think you probably jumped right in. Well, of course, you already had computer tech stuff going on in your life. But were there some things that you were like, wow, this is not easy?
There was. I mean, first off, the fact of I had a computer and a word processing, Microsoft Word I was using. Originally, I was using Open Office, but had a software package, so I could just type rather than write. Because most people can't read my writing anyway. And the second thing is, if you know anybody, and computer programmers were terrible spellers. Most of the ones I've met were all terrible spellers. First off, we don't understand English because we're used to hard and packed rules. If you always have to have a period to the spot, it's always got to be there. If you need a colon at this spot, it's got to be there. That's not English. you know, English, I don't know who came up with these rules, but they're kind of like, you know, as the old rule goes, I before E, except, you know.
Except.
there's always an exception. Well, programmers, we don't like exceptions. You know, I want it cut and dried. And this is one reason why Spellcheck was one of the first free software packages out there. Because
yeah.
Programmers are terrible spellers. So having these tools come about is what allowed me to start writing, to feel that I could, because the system would correct my spelling, the system would, you know, correct my typing and things like that. But what was difficult? One, that was difficult. Two, the stories weren't so much difficult and getting them down, but then making sure everything flowed, making sure there was a lot of times an idea came up halfway through the book that I needed to go back then to add something, either a teaser or something that would allow the explanation for what was to happen, especially in the thrillers. I found that. But then once I had a book, that's when I found out about the query letter and about dealing with agents and editors and publishers. And that's when the difficulty came in.
Yeah. Oh,
the,
yeah.
The difficult part. I really think writing the book is the easiest part. It's what comes after that is difficult, mainly because myself as a writer, what I enjoy is writing the book. Marketing, polishing, you know, all that stuff, that doesn't excite me.
Yes, and you know, that's what 90% now, of people say, Craig. It's like, let me write the book. Let somebody else do all this other stuff. And sadly, in today's world, that's not the way it is anymore.
You know, it's so much easier to me nowadays to be a writer than it was, say, 30 years ago.
In a lot of ways, yes.
Larger than that. Yeah. I mean, I try to imagine what it was like to type on a manual typewriter.
Which I started doing years and years ago.
You know, write a story. I mean, to write a book, I would never get past the first page. You know, especially when you used to have to use the eraser, you know, or the whiteout.
Yeah.
It would not work. But thankfully, we're not in that age. And you know, you might say technology is what allowed me to become a writer.
Well, Craig, what's next for you? I know you have another book in the works in this series. If you would give us a little preview of that without giving away too much, just enough to tease us a little bit, wanting to read that next one.
Okay. Yeah, the second book in the series is called February Surprise. And in it, Jasmine had just gotten back from a week in Florida and had been reminded during that week what warmth felt like, and she finds herself back in Wyoming in the middle of February in the biting cold. And as the book opens, she's just gotten back and has a week work, but there's weird things going on in the apartment. First off, she got back. She thought she had some food, and it seems to be gone. And the little things are coming up. She, all of a sudden, the life that she thought she had and the direction it was going, surprise, it's going a different direction. I don't want to give out too much, but an event happens that nobody thought was even possible. So all of a sudden, she has to learn to deal with this new event and all the repercussions that come from that. It's all part of the idea of building the story. It's basically the second book, and even the third deals with her learning more about God. So February Surprise, I'm hoping it's, isn't too long before it's out, dealing with one publisher and checking others. But I just finished yesterday the draft for another inspirational fictional romance.
Wonderful.
Called Love. Yeah, it's called Love, Reality, or Illusion. Again, main character is a female. She's 32-year-old up-and-comer in the dot-com world in San Francisco in 2002.
Ooh.
And it's pretty exciting. Grew up in a small town in New Mexico, Raton, New Mexico. All of a sudden, the world that she thinks is set perfect is all a culture. But so I just finished it, and so now we're into polishing.
Yes.
The I also have a thriller that I finished a couple months ago, and we're
wow.
trying to find agents for that. And I just keep writing.
Good for you.
I don't know if all of them will get published, but I enjoy just writing. I have to admit, I don't read as much anymore unless I'm reading another writer's or beta
yeah.
reading their stories or stuff like that. That's what most of my other reading comes from.
Right.
The because I guess in my viewpoint, I look at why should I read somebody else's idea of a story when I have a story?
Yes.
I want to see how it develops. I want to see how it happens. And I have a little control over it. And if something reaches a point, well, that doesn't make sense, I can go back and change it. When you're reading a book, you can't. But there are a lot of great authors out there. I still have a library. My office is still filled with books and books and more books. And my wife reads.
Here.
Yeah, my wife reads 5 or 6 books a week.
Mm-hmm.
She has some health issues, so she doesn't get out much. But her big thing is reading, and which is one reason. One of the things that brought Moose Ridge in the beginning around, because I'd written thrillers. Most of my books were espionage type. And she asked me, why don't you write something I like? You know, she likes romance. And so I thought, well, and then the idea came to mix that with an inspirational book, make it an inspirational
yeah.
romance. That's what brought it about. And the series of it, I actually have, I'll finish the second. The third is under, and the third and the fourth are in the works. So,
very good.
We'll see if it moves forward. But the amazing thing to me is how, you know, watching God's hand in this and learning the ropes, you might say.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked before about people are, you know, my age getting into this versus 20-year-old coming out of college who wants to write a book.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different environment. And you know, this age, I remember thinking, you know, well, am I too old? But then, of course, she just recently passed away. But look what Betty White did in her 70s,
right.
in her 80s, in her 90s,
yeah.
And others. So, no, age doesn't matter. I mean, when you pick up the book, you don't go, well, no, that's written by a 60-year-old. I don't want to read that. I mean, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather read a book by somebody that's lived life than somebody who's dreaming of living life.
Exactly. Craig, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show today. You shared so much of your personal experiences, and you shared so much about your writing, and I want to thank you. It's been a real pleasure to have you with us today, and may God bless you in your future writing endeavors.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and I thank you very much for allowing this and for supporting so many writers out there, giving us a voice that we may not normally have and an opportunity to share about our writing. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Don't forget to go to pattysheene.com. That's PattySheene.com. You'll find there a Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page, and that will give you links to all of the shows we have recorded today, and also under each one is a more information tab. Thank you for spending time with us. Until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a